to Guerrilla Radio, recorded October 1st, 2025. While you may wonder why governments of the West billed and sold as defenders and purveyors of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, instead support death, destruction, and moral degradation. It's a conundrum, but maybe history can help. Professor Jeremy Kuzmarov writes for and serves as managing editor to Covert Action magazine. Kuzmarov's book titles include Obama's Unending Wars, The Russians Are Coming Again, written with John Marciano, Warmonger, How Clinton's Malign Foreign Policy Launched the U.S. Trajectory from Bush 2 to Biden, and his latest, co-authored with Dan Kovalik and released just yesterday, Syria, Anatomy of Regime Change. Jeremy's most recent article at CAM, Anglo-American Intelligence Agents Aided in Hitler's Rise to Power, provides the context for understanding the inscrutable recent behavior of the Occidental nations. Jeremy Kuzmarov in the first half. And yesterday, as Canada observed its fourth National Day for Truth and Reconciliation, meant to recognize past and current injustices committed against Indigenous populations by colonial Canada, Prime Minister Mark Carney welcomed Donald Trump's historic new Middle East peace plan. But just as Canada's recognition and reconciliation is offered in a strictly proscribed form, so too Trump's 20-point peace plan neither addresses the myriad crimes done to Indigenous populations in Palestine, nor provides just remedy for them. Hannah Kawas is chairperson of the Vancouver-based Canada-Palestine Association. He's too a longtime radio journalist whose program Voice of Palestine was a beacon for the diaspora community. The CPA published its response to the lauded recognition of theoretical Palestinian statehood, calling it phony and saying, quote, "For months we have been warning of the dangers of this insipid plan that aims to distract and deflect from the ongoing genocide." Hannah Kawas and Palestine's bitter betrayal in the second half. But first, Jeremy Kuzmarov and destroying Germany and Russia to pave the way for Anglo-American domination of the world. Welcome back to the program, Jeremy.
Well, it's great to be here again.
Well, it's always great to speak with you, of course, and congratulations on Syria, Anatomy of Regime Change, published just today with longtime friend of this show, Dan Kovalik, as well.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's an important book. Hopefully people will check it out. It deals with, it's the first book to chronicle what was a 40-year regime change operation by the United States with its allies to overthrow the Assad government. Started really with an operation to try and destabilize and overthrow Hafez al-Assad, who was the father of Bashar al-Assad. And it, of course, was not framed this way in the U.S. media or Western media, which presented it as some kind of great humanitarian endeavor. But really, there were underlying geostrategic calculations that we look at, and we look at the horrendous consequences in empowering al-Qaeda and just all the different facets of this regime change operation, including the vital role played by liberal intellectuals in going along with or advancing government propaganda, demonizing Assad and obscuring what U.S. foreign policy interests in Syria really were. So there's a chapter on that, which hopefully people will find interesting. And we name names of those compromised intellectuals, many of whom have left-wing, you know, they fashion themselves as on the left, and they write for publication like Jacobin and Counterpunch and, you know, and distinguished universities. But really, they were playing a vital role in this regime change operation. And most of them, hypocritically, are silent now in the face of horrific atrocities that have been going on since al-Qaeda took over in Syria, ethnic cleansing of the Shiite Alawite population and massacres. And you don't hear any outcry about human rights from these hypocrites.
Well, and ironically enough, these are the same people that derided anybody that was on the right side of history on the left spectrum as being useful idiots of Assad for all these years. And really, they were people that did stand up in defense of just moral clarity in Syria during this phony war, or phony civil war, were really dragged through the mud in a pattern that we've seen repeated since, cancellation and all these other things we've seen in other conflicts as well. It really proved to be a template of a sort.
that's something we go into, how they slandered the small number of journalists and academics who were trying to expose the truth and presenting critical analysis. They were smeared through the mud, slandered. Many were blacklisted, lost jobs, couldn't get jobs, couldn't get access to the traditional left-wing media or liberal media, which was among the worst in all this.
Well, and you're no stranger to going against the grain at Covert Action Magazine, and you do it again in this article that we've agreed to speak about, and we'll get back to the book too. But you and I have spoken in the past on this program about Wall Street and its role in the rise of Hitler. But your article this time goes much deeper than that, than just Brown Brothers Harriman and the Bush family fortunes. Can we talk about your article at CAM, the Anglo-American intelligence agents aided in Hitler's rise to power? And firstly, can we begin, because this really fascinates me, who was Ernst Putzi Hanfstaengl, and how did he help determine the power dynamics of the rest of the 20th century?
Well, this is a very illuminating book was published that my article was in part of the review of, a book published by Trine Day by Jim McGregor and John O'Dowd called Two World Wars and Hitler, Who is Responsible, Anglo-American Money, Foreign Agents, and Geopolitics. And this, you know, was very illuminating for me to read, who's, you know, read a lot of history books before and studied World War II, but really never came across this information. And he showed that, Putzi Hanfstaengl was a German from the upper crust of German society who studied at Harvard, was very close with Theodore Roosevelt, and then he was introduced to Hitler by an American intelligence agent named Truman Smith. And Hanfstaengl basically was Hitler's handler, I guess you can say, who helped bring him out of obscurity. You know, Hitler was a failed artist, World War I veteran, who after the war was kind of living on the margins of society and was involved. I mean, he had a talent for oratory, and he was giving speeches in these beer halls and flaming people, blaming the Jews and blaming the liberals and pacifists for the humiliation at Versailles, and, you know, supposedly selling Germany out. And that was the kind of rhetoric he was advancing. But, you know, he was still kind of small potatoes until Hanfstaengl, molded him into an electric national leader. You know, he guided him, he advised him on how to reach a broader audience, perfect his speaking style, whip up the people into a fervor and an hysteria, and forge the right connections for him that he could have a much bigger platform and emerge as a national leader. And the underlying agenda, the authors argue, was that there were, you know, these elite cabals in Britain and the United States whose primary goal was Anglo-American dominance over the world. And actually, in a previous book, they had shown, you know, and he looked at the Milner Group, a group led by Alfred Milner, this kind of elite British group led by Cecil Rhodes and Alfred Milner, who had pushed forward, you know, the British Empire in the, you know, Victorian era, late 19th into the early 20th century. And it's the same group, you know, Germany was seen as a rival threat to British, you know, a threat to British global dominance. So they helped provoke World War I, and they made it look like Germany started the war, but really they were kind of pulling the string with France as well, and Russia to some extent, which was an ally, the Tsarist order, ally of Britain and France, that they were really kind of manipulating Germany, but set it up to make it look like Germany was responsible for starting the war, so then they can crush them in the Versailles Treaty, taking, you know, huge penalties and occupation of their land and weaken them considerably after they had imposed a crushing embargo during the war, similar to what the U.S. had done with Syria. And then, but they still saw, because Germany then rebuilt itself after the 1920s and 30s. And you had some elements, Wall Street banks were helping to finance Germany's revitalization. So MacGregor and O'Dowd kind of argue that the plan was to get Germany to fall into political extremism and to start another world war, and then they would be crushed and destroyed irrevocably in that war, which is exactly what happened. And that would pave the way for a new generation of Anglo-American supremacy with Germany crushed. And the only way was for them to start a new world war, and then that would allow the Allies to bomb them as they did, bomb their cities like Dresden and Cologne to nothing, destroy their industrial base, and destroy their threat as a rival to Anglo-American dominance, and to forge a breach with Russia. Because I think that the and this underlied the war with Ukraine today is the desire to create a breach between Germany and Russia, because a fear of a German alliance with Russia is the greatest fear for Anglo-American imperialists, because that is a potential threat to their power. So Hitler was the perfect tool to coordinate a invasion of the Soviet Union that would also destroy the Soviet Union, which was another potential threat. The two countries would destroy each other. And if you look at U.S. strategy and British strategy in World War II, it was to kind of bide their time, allow the Soviets to do most of the heavy lifting. The Soviets ultimately sustained 25 million casualties or something like that, and their entire infrastructure was destroyed in the German invasion. But they killed 70% of Nazi soldiers. And Douglas MacArthur said it was the greatest military achievement in world history. He was crediting the Soviet Union. And that was all by design, that those two countries would, according to this book, which I think has some good evidence to back up its thesis, that was all set up by design to crush those two countries and pave the way for Anglo-American dominance. And in the post-war era, which is what happened. And then he discusses also the Morgenthau Plan was designed to completely deindustrialize and ravage Germany's economy after World War II. So that kind of fits in with his larger argument. So Hofstadter was the key figure who was introduced to Hitler, because he could make him a national figure and give him the right, introduce him to the right people and get him, to have a national audience for his rantings. And otherwise he would have been nothing without with Hofstadter and some other. The book goes into other intelligence liaisons with Hitler and were kind of his handlers who actually assisted his rise to power. And he also looks at the media, the Hearst media, and British media was pretty favorable. Hitler got a lot of favorable press coverage until, he attacked Britain and started, the full-fledged Holocaust. But when he was just persecuting the Jews in the early phase and the Nuremberg Law, there was very little attention or outcry in any of the Western media. And that seems to fit with the argument that there was this whole plan to kind of build up Hitler, start the world war, and then he became the bad guy, when he invaded Britain and went too far with the Jews. And that's, then they can mobilize public opinion for a war against him that was a humanitarian war, bomb the country to smithereens, and have them, fight the Russians, which was the goal all along, and both countries are destroyed, and Anglo-American dominance. And now the threat emerged again from Russia, and so you have the Ukraine war. It was designed to cut off Russia from Germany and prevent an alliance between Russia and Germany again, generations later.
Well, you write in the article, quote, "World War II, like World War I, was engineered by US UK bankers intent on destroying both Germany and the USSR to pave the way for Anglo-American world domination." It's amazing to me how similar it is to what we're seeing today, 100 and something years after the first war. The same playbook unfolding, and even yet, it's a testament to propaganda that World War II is still regarded by most, I would argue, historians on either side of the political divide as the so-called good war, as America's good war. Even anti-war people are saying, well, that was America's last good war, not recognizing that this was an entirely engineered war on false premises, as they all seem to be, and even worse than any other that had preceded or has followed yet. What amazes me, too, is that people like Ernst Pützi, Hofstadl can contribute so much and yet remain in the shadows for so long. And as you mentioned, he introduced Hitler around. He was in high society on both sides of the Atlantic. He funded the newspaper, the Nazi newspaper expansion. He coaches him in how to speak. He even brings in Harvard fight songs into the rallies. He edits Mein Kampf. And he even, according to your article and perhaps the book it's based on, provided the matches for the infamous Reichstag fire.
Yeah, that was an excellent summary. Yeah, he was crucial. Hitler never would have rose to power without them, for all those reasons you said, all the things he was doing. And there was a network of intelligence agents, I think, working on this project. And then, I think he was there at the right. He seems to have been the key figure to set up the Reichstag fire. And if the audience doesn't remember, that was the key triggering incident that brought the Nazis to power. There was a fire in the German parliament, and they blamed the communist, a Dutch youth, Ernest van der Lubbe. But it was a classic false flag operation set by the Nazis themselves. And Göring admitted to it years later, Hermann Göring, a top Nazi. And I think he had been in key position in the parliament, and his home was adjacent to the parliament. And Hofstadl just happened to be staying there the night of the Reichstag fire. And it's believed that he was the key figure helping to coordinate that incident and setting up this poor Dutch youth who was ultimately executed. But that was the excuse. The Nazis said, oh, we're saving the country from communist takeover. And that was a plan. That was the same scheme that the CIA has used in other countries. Like, they did the same thing in Indonesia. They set up a communist coup against socialist leader Ahmad Sukarno, and they fabricated atrocity stories, and that gave justification for a far-right-wing coup of the Nazi-like Suharto government that liquidated 1 to 3 million communists and kept other members of the, or suspected communists, or members of the Indonesian Communist Party in prisons for decades, Nazi-type behavior. So, the Nazis, that's what they did right away. They went after the communists. I think the German communist leader was placed in solitary confinement for 11 years and then executed. Totally inhumane things that went on. But it's these shadowy figures that they're only disclosed now in this book, 80 years after the events, and he's rarely discussed in any standard history text. There's, school history texts, even more critical historians, I had never seen or heard of this until I read this book. And I, read a lot of history books, and I'm a critical-minded historian, but I'd never read about this before. But it made sense. The book is well argued and has good, facts behind it and proves a lot of the points it's making, so...
Well, and it's a testament to the power of history itself. And when things in the current day start making sense, when you add the right pieces of the puzzle. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Professor Jeremy Kuzmarov. He writes and serves as managing editor for Covert Action magazine. His book titles include Obama's Unending Wars, The Russians Are Coming Again, Warmonger, How Clinton's Malign Foreign Policy Launched the U.S. Trajectory from Bush 2 to Biden. His latest, as we mentioned off the top, and co-authored with friend of the show, Dan Kovalik, was released just yesterday, Syria, Anatomy of Regime Change. Was it yesterday or today, Jeremy, that book was dropped?
Officially today. I received an advance copy a few weeks ago, but I think officially it's available today.
And how do people find it?
You can find it on Amazon or Baraka Books. as a publisher. It's a Montreal-based publisher.
Now, excellent. Now, then let's talk about that in a little bit. But before we do, when you mentioned the CIA and their work in Indonesia to overthrow Sukarno, there's a through line, and it seems natural enough with your article here. And his name is Robert Lansing, he being the uncle to Alan Dulles, the notorious head of the CIA in its early formation, long rumored to have been involved in the JFK assassination and God knows how many other things. Before there was the CIA, before there was what was before the CIA, the OSS, there was another entity, you describe as a State Department Secret Service. Do you want to talk a little bit about Robert Lansing and his role in fomenting the rise of Hitler and the enacting of the Milner Group's plan?
Yes, well, Robert Lansing is a very sinister figure in American history. I was actually I teach a course at a community college and we're covering World War I this week, and I was discussing how he well, what happened is that to make a long story short, the U.S. had a neutrality policy in World War I, and William Jennings Bryan, who had been the Populist Party leader, who was suspicious of Wall Street, was the Secretary of State, and he was committed to barring J.P. Morgan because Britain and France were running out of money because they thought they'd have a quick victory in World War I, but they underestimated German military capability, and it devolved into stalemate and trench warfare, and they're running out of the money, so they turned to J.P. Morgan for a loan. But Bryan said no, that would violate the neutrality policy and put a leading U.S. banker on the side of the Allies, and it would probably get the U.S. into the war. Well, Bryan was forced to resign by taking that position, and Woodrow Wilson replaced him with Robert Lansing as Secretary of State, who had strong ties with Wall Street, greenlighted that loan, and indeed that's what got the U.S. into World War One. And resulted in the deaths of 50 to 100,000 American soldiers. So that showed his fealty to Wall Street and big banking interests, who are the ones often provoking wars that they can profit massively off of. Morgan, I think, was also involved in the conspiracy to create the Federal Reserve, which placed a lot of control over the money supply in the hands of private banking interests and allow them to print money to wage wars in the future. And then, yeah, he set up this kind of forerunner, the OSS, from the State Department intelligence agency. And it was that was, I think, personnel. The book, I think, argues that it was people from that agency that Lansing had set up that were the ones working with Hanfstaengl to support Hitler for the reasons that I the geo political reason that I described. And the intelligence agencies, yeah, are always involved in dirty work, but it should be understood that their dirty work served the agenda of the Wall Street banking cartel and big bankers, and that was something and big corporations. And that was something Philip Agee, the Covert Action magazine founder, emphasized in his book Inside the Company. And yeah, look at Lansing's career shows that he was closely tied with leading banks, with Morgan, with Wall Street firms. And then his nephews, Alan and John Foster Dulles, worked for huge Wall Street banks that had as clients the top leading corporations. And they were key figures in U.S. intelligence and all kinds of skullduggery in the 50s. And they were also the firms they worked for actually helped bankroll and financially contributed to Hitler's rise to power. So that was another facet of the story. And I think he goes into that in this book. They go into that. And there are some other books that cover that history too. There's a good one by Jock Powell called Big Business and the Rise of Hitler, which I once taught. I used to teach a course, night course on the Holocaust, and I signed that book several times because, yeah, Holocaust studies also sometimes doesn't go into the forces that resulted in Hitler's rise to power, including the big banks, and big corporations and Wall Street banks and leading figures in American foreign policy history were involved in Hitler's rise. And then they were traded. They continued, actually, their firms continued to do business with Nazi financiers even after the U.S. went to war with Nazi Germany. And many were thought to have violated the Trading with the Enemy Act and were being investigated as traitors. And that's when they started bankrolling McCarthyite politician like Richard Nixon to turn it around, that somehow the communi there were communists in the State Department who were traitors and sold the United States out at the Yalta. But they were the real traitors. They had violated the Trading with the Enemy Act, and there were people onto them. And there was a congressman, Jerry Voorhees, who was spearheading an investigation. And that's why they funded Nixon's career, Nixon to defeat Voorhees. They poured in huge money to Nixon, and he used red baiting and dirty tactics. And he squeaked by in defeating Voorhees, who was a threat to launch an investigation against these basically fascist-minded criminals who infected the American foreign policy apparatus since Robert Lansing and through the Dulles brothers' years. And we see, really Nazi-type behavior today among government leaders. Some have referred to it as the Nazification of the American government. And I think, in a way, it starts with Robert Lansing and the Dulles boys.
Well, and every accusation, a confession, we've seen a lot of that lately. We've got 1 minute left, Jeremy, not enough time to pump the book again. But I started, and I got to come back to in the introduction, talking about the current German acquiescence to the destruction of the country's economy, the blowing up of Nord Stream 2, and other deindustrialization. It seems, again, what's old is new. Can you provide some illumination as to why the German elite are allowing their country be destroyed on this altar? It's got to be more than just attacking Russia.
That's a good question. Yeah, I mean, these elite appear to have been co-opted. I don't know. I mean, the answer to that question, it's a very good question. And yeah, we see certain patterns of history repeating itself in different ways. And that destruction of the Nord Stream pipeline was key to destroying a strong economic relationship between Russia and Germany is what the Anglo-Saxon imperialists fear the most. So in that era, they triggered world wars to destroy Germany. In our era, they triggered the Ukraine war and they blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. Why those German leaders would go along, I don't know. Maybe a book will be written 50, 80 years from now that show that the German leaders had strong ties to Anglo-American intelligence. Wouldn't surprise me, but I don't know for sure if that's the case.
I can't wait that long, Jeremy. I can't
Yeah,
wait for
unfortunately, we
history.
won't be alive to know the full story.
That's the problem with history. It takes so damn long.
Yeah.
I'm just looking too at a New York Times picture of Jelani come al-Shaar, his visit to New York, the head chopper in New York, jihadist rebel statesman, the many faces of Syria's leader, says the New York Times in a sick-making hagiography with beautiful photographs of the guys who not long ago were chopping off the heads of men, women, and children. That's in Syria. Again, Jeremy's article, Anglo-American Intelligence Agents Aided in Hitler's Rise to Power. Find that at Covert Action Magazine. That's covertactionmagazine.com. The book with Dan Kovalik is out right now, Syria: Anatomy of Regime Change. Congratulations on the book. I hope you do well with it. And I'll talk to you the next time, Jeremy.
Okay, thanks for having me, Chris. Very good discussion.
Everybody stay tuned because I'll be back with Hannah Kawas and we're going to talk about Gaza and Palestine and the so-called peace plan that's being floated. Till the next time, Jeremy.
Moscow, Tokyo, New York. Guerrilla Radio is everywhere at guerrilla-radio.com. Everywhere, all the time.
Civilization. has been challenged from the start. With all these people, things can fall apart. Ideas can spread by many different means. Whispered words on TV screens. Alarming news wherever you go. Angry people talking on the radio.